Telling you, bro. What's been happening, bro?
Not too much.
Still hitting more Peggy-O's?
Check 1, 2, test 1, 2, Prestige Worldwide. Oh, shit, this thing's on. We're recording. Hey, everybody, thanks for tuning in again. As always, just finished this 39-show arena show tour with Daryl Hall and John Oates this summer. It took up most of my summer. And it's good to be back home, and really good to be back home, up in my studio working on some projects, writing some new music. And I thought I would take a day off and get this episode out to you, dear listener. Sammy Hagar. I mean, come on. One of the greatest rock and roll singers of all time. Bad Motor Scooter. Rock Candy. Montrose. Van Halen. And his main man, Vic Johnson, also sat in on the episode and joined in. I first met Sammy back when we did Daryl Hall's TV show Live from Daryl's House. We recorded an episode down in Cabo at Sammy's club, and we kind of hit it off, stayed in touch. And Sammy invited me to sit in with his band a couple times with Mike Anthony, original bass player for Van Halen, and Vic on guitar, and Jason Bonham on drums. That was cool. And he recently hit me up to help him put together an episode for his own TV show called Rock and Roll Road Trip, which we did. Recorded that. That was fun. So, those of you that are listening, oh, I gotta say too, I mean, I'm a huge, huge Van Halen fan. Huge. I used to have a teacher who would say huge. I don't know if that's a real word, but huge Van Halen fan. Eddie Van Halen, my guitar hero, still is big influence, so this makes it extra special. I love all Van Halen, the Dave and Sammy stuff. If you notice, some of my episodes I'll use musical excerpts from, you know, friends' music and stuff. I'm not going to do that this one. Couple reasons: I want to get it done quickly. It takes a lot of time to do that, and also I don't want to get any cease and desist letters from Van Halen managers and attorneys. So instead, you're listening to a tune called Slow from my record Grease Factor. I wanted to rock some pound cake, but hey, use your imagination, you know? Dreams, finish what you started right here, right now, black and blue, pound cake. Love comes walking in, 5150 OU812 and Law for Carnal Knowledge. I mean, man, so many great Van Halen things with Sammy. And of course, the Montrose stuff, and we'll talk about all that. All I ask is you leave me a nice rating on iTunes. If you take a second and do that, I really appreciate it. A comment, all great. So on a beautiful California day, I head over to Sammy's. He says, hey, you got to text me because I'm not going to hear that buzzer, man. I'm going to be playing guitar really loud. And he was right. Sammy finally comes to the door. Here we go. Enjoy.
Hey, Shane, what's happening?
What's up, Sammy? All right, I am here at Sammy Hagar Studio with the one and only Sammy Hagar and his main right-hand man, Mr. Vic Johnson.
Hello, everyone.
And where are we?
Yeah, Northern California.
Northern California.
Yeah, I built this...
Discreet location.
I built this studio about 9-10 years ago just for my own use. It's not available to rent out, you know.
Right.
And it's a very personal place for me. And Vic and I, we spend, you know, probably 10, 15 hours a week over here. It's like this is our little man cave. But Chickenfoot did both records here. And I did my record with Sammy Hagar and friends here. And we just finished a new record, which tentatively is being called right now Space Between. Sammy Hagar and the Circle. space between.
Well, you heard it here first.
Yes, you did.
Does Eddie Trunk even know this yet?
No.
I see that.
And Trunk's my man, man. I love Eddie. Just coincidence, Shane. It's, you know, we've been friends for a long time, and you popped in here, I said, sure, let's do this. But I don't have a motive for trying to sell the record. I don't even have a record deal yet. I haven't went and shopped yet. We just finished. Just finished the mixes. It's being mastered next week, and I'm going to take it to record companies and hopefully come out in January.
Nice. Yeah, man.
So first album for The Circle. You know, this band, Jason and Vic and Michael Anthony, Jason Bonham, Vic Johnson and Michael Anthony and myself, we've been playing together for how many years?
It's been 4 years, I think.
4 years, and we do shows all over, you know. But we don't have, we've never had a record. The first tour we did, the first five shows we ever played, we recorded a live CD and a live DVD. The first frickin' week.
There you go, man. There's no playing around.
Yeah, so right said, no, we got to give the people some new material. The problem is that, I know you know the problem. When you have a band like this, where we got Van Halen songs because of me and Mikey, we've got Sammy Solo, we got Chickenfoot, we got Montrose, we even play some Led Zeppelin songs. When you have a set list like that, it's hard to write a new song to stick in between there. You know, in between I Can't Drive 55 right now and Whole Lot of Love, right? You're going to put some brand new song in there. It's going to be tough, but I think we did it. I think we got a good record.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to hear that, man. Yeah, I heard you guys you were nice enough to invite me to Biloxi, and I sat in with you, and you killed those Zeppelin covers, man. I mean,
you know how good it feels to play a Led Zeppelin song with Jason Bonham on drums?
I got to experience it that night. It was great.
Yeah,
man.
That's
and Vic's
that's the whole
killing
key.
The parts, man. I mean,
thank you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot. That's where you came and played with this Biloxi. But first time I met you was in Cabo with Daryl.
That's right.
At Daryl's house. But it was Daryl's house at Sammy's house.
At Sammy's house. You want to be on Daryl's house? Yeah, but I'm not going to Daryl's house. You have to come to
I would go to Daryl's. It's just when they time frame.
Let me think. Pauling, New York or Cabo? When was that? Like in March? I think we made the better decision. But
Well, it was because I was down there that time, you know. So I said, the time frame they were trying to get me to do the show, I happened to be in Cabo. I wasn't trying to be a prick.
I didn't mean that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got to be careful about my image. You know, Shane, a lot of people think I'm a mean guy. You know?
I've never heard one bad thing. Oh. As a matter of fact, I was on my way here, and I went into one of the buses to grab something to drink on the ride over here, and the guy's like, where are you headed to? I'm going to a friend's house. And so it just kind of came out like, doing an interview, going to visit this, you know, Sammy Hagar, and he goes, man, I drove, I forget the band, and he said they were on the bill. He was one of the nicest guys I ever met.
Boom, see?
He just said that to me.
Well, we have to protect that, see, Shane? You know, you got to be careful, you know? I wouldn't want somebody to get the wrong idea about me. Yeah, we're fellow Libras, exactly. Like Daryl, too, right?
Daryl's a Libra.
It's a Libra fest.
But, you know, it's funny, I want to tell everybody when we did that taping, because I get emails where people are like, okay, Rock Candy. Sammy shows up. It's like 11 a.m. I mean, usually 11 a.m. the crew
when
is
getting Cabo.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Usually the crew is getting. Yeah. I mean, I just plugged in my shit. Like I'm just tuning up, and we're banging stuff. And Sammy shows up 11 a.m. Just we run through it one time. He goes, Daryl's like, that felt great. Well, there you go. There's the take. And I was like, can we do it one more time? It's Sammy Hagar. It's like Rock Candy, man. Can we do it one more time?
You just wanted to play it again. That's all. You just wanted to have more fun.
What
Shane.
Was that tune? There was a Chickenfoot tune we did.
Oh, yeah. Sexy Little Thing.
Sexy Little Thing. We didn't even make it through the intro. We were rehearsing it.
Yeah.
And then we were like, woo, that's it. It's done.
That's how you do it.
I can't argue with Daryl and Sammy.
I tell you, you know, I love Daryl for that, because so many guys will beat you to death, you know, trying to learn a song. I just experienced that with somebody else recently, and it was just like, my God, hey, we got this. You know what I mean? It's going to be okay. You know, we have to do it again and again and again and again. But, I think sometimes the first takes can be, with good musicians, are the best, because there's the energy of not knowing the song a little bit, and the tension, and that kind of creates something better than comfort in music to me. You know, music, if someone's too comfortable, you know, it's just don't have an edge, you know. Just I like, Vic will tell you.
We do it all the time.
I'm a one or two take guy, yeah.
Don't feel alone.
No, I'm with you, man. I mean, well, let me ask you a couple questions, Sammy, like as far as that subject, like for Montrose, those early records, were those really raw? I mean, was that hammered out in the studio? Or was that done?
We rehearsed in a room, wrote those songs, eight songs, right?
Yeah.
Those eight songs. We had two other ones, actually, that everybody knew they weren't going to make a record. Ted Templeman walked into rehearsal, listened to all eight songs live, and said, okay, I'll sign you guys. Let's go in the studio. We flew to L.A., went straight into the studio, Amigo, the Warner Brothers studio, and we banged that record out. I think we did it like in 10 days, the first Montrose record. I actually had a wisdom tooth that got, you know, where the skin grows over, you know, I couldn't shut my mouth.
Impacted,
right? With the gum had grown over the damn thing, and I couldn't shut my mouth, and I was in horrible pain. And I'm this is God's truth. And I went to the dentist. Ted Templeman said, "Man, you got to go to a dentist." I'm going, "Yeah, no, I can't chew. I can't eat nothing." You know, it's like a big old pile of skin, flesh in your mouth back there. And I went, and they put me to sleep. And pull both sides out. Said, "Fuck it, we'll pull the other one too." I'm going, "Okay, what do I know?" You know, right? I'm 22 years old, 23. And they pulled both fucking things out, stuck a big chunk of gauze in each side, stitched them up, you know, and I went in and sang "Bad Motor Scooter." God's truth.
Shit, I
had fucking blood squirting out of my mouth when I sang that. It's like, that's how, you know, come on, those days, that's how bad I wanted that shit, man. I wasn't going to miss no day in the studio for nothing.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and then Ted Templeman mixed. I never was around for the mixes and all that. But
it was pretty raw, pretty quick and dirty.
Yeah, you know, Ronnie, everybody's good players. You know, Carmassi was really his pocket guy, you know. Most bands that play that kind of music, the drummer speeds up, you know.
Yeah.
Carmassi was right in there, and yeah, it's crazy. Montrose. I met Ronnie Montrose on a Tuesday afternoon, and by that weekend I took him up to see Denny as a drummer. He had Bill Church, and a bunch of other bass players tried out, but we ended up with Bill Church. By that weekend we had a band. By the next week I'd written all them songs. I'd already written "Bad Motor Scooter," "One Thing on My Mind," "Make It Last," "I Don't Want It." Those are my songs that I brought in there, and then we wrote "Rock Candy" together, the whole band, and Ronnie had "Rock the Nation." Boom, we did one cover of "Good Rocking Tonight."
Oh yeah, I love that record, man.
Man, I tell you, that, you know, I think back on that, and I think that's, like I said, that's the way to do it. You know, the energy is there. You can beat that energy right out and make some sterile record if you're not careful, you know, with a band like that. But anyway, some people do and some people don't. Then again, then you got a record like "Asia," where last time I really listened to that record, you know, which they took 100 years to make, you know, last time I listened to that record, I was so blown away how good it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going, wow, I guess you can't just make one of those records overnight, you know, in 5 minutes.
I think it's a different dish, probably.
It is.
A different sort of meal, you know. I remember you told me on the plane, you said that Eddie and Alex would just hammer out riffs and say, "Come over, we have a song," and it would be like one riff.
Yeah.
And so that's a whole different approach, right? It would take like a year to do a record.
Yeah, that Van Halen's got into that towards the end. It was like pulling teeth, man. Every time I'd go home, they'd recut the fucking song at a different tempo. So I'd do a vocal, you know, on the last couple albums. I'd do it like my vocals. And
yeah.
I'd say, "Phew, I'm done, man. I got my lyrics done. Come back." "Well, you got to come back in." "Why? What happened?" "Well, Al and I recut the song. Why don't you hear something? Come back in. The song's in a different key because it sounds better on guitar." Nothing to do with the singer. A different tempo because Al felt like he could groove it better at a different tempo. So my vocals didn't work anymore.
Man.
I'd have to re-sing the shit. And sometimes we'd do that two and three times. I remember "Run Around" from Foreign Love Chronology is the first time they tortured me with that. I had to sing that song again. And then Andy Johns, the producer, erased my vocal trying to punch in a guitar part. And he punched and hit the vocal and erased the vocal.
Oh.
And I had to sing that song so many times. It was like, by the time I sang it, I'm going, "I fucking hate this song." Yeah.
Well.
But the first album was 5150 was bang, you know. And OU812 as well. OU812, we weren't even prepared, really. We just threw ourselves in the studio and did it.
I mean, I saw you with Van Halen when I don't remember the year, but I was about 17, and I was just blown away. And after you were on Daryl's House, I hadn't listened to those records in years, man. And I pulled up 5150, and like the opening, you know, yes. That shit is badass, man.
Eddie had that Strat laying on the floor with a bass string for the E, and it was tuned down to D.
Ah.
I mean, no, it was tuned down to A instead of E, and but it was a bass string, and it would... It just caused a distortion out of that Marshall that was so badass, that riff in that song.
Man, I'm sure the speakers love that one. Mm-hmm. A bass string. Wow, I never knew
that. Yeah, it was a smaller, you know, wasn't like
a 60 or something like that, I think it was. Something.
Yeah, it was big.
It's a big string.
It was big old string.
Like on a bass.
Yeah. Yeah. A Barrett, sort of a poor man's baritone guitar, kind of.
Yeah, Eddie's got kind of like perfect pitch. He really has, you know, like he can tune a guitar like fucking, there it is, you know.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for that, I don't know what fucking key those songs would have been in. I still don't know. I've never really sat down and played 5150 and checked out the tuning. But Eddie picked a guitar up off the floor and tuned it. And there was never a strobo tuner near that band until we started using piano on the second album. And, you know, the more keyboards he started doing, then all of a sudden we started having to tune. But Mikey would take his bass and always tune to Ed. Eddie go, you know, and Mikey go, boom, boom, and he'd have to tune. And I just start singing. I have no idea what key we're in or what, you know, pitch it was. And it's wicked.
Oh, yeah.
Recording like that,
that's
you know what I mean?
Do it, man.
Then you go to do a keyboard overdub and go, huh? Whoops.
Well, you know, you've always worked. You're a great guitar player yourself, Sam.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, and you've worked with great guitar players. I mean,
Vic Johnson.
Yeah, we're getting to Vic. I got Ronnie Montrose, Eddie Van Halen, Joe Satriani, and Vic. I mean, who is it? What do you look for in guitar player? I know you told me rhythm one time. I mean, is that a thing for you?
Yeah, I still think my favorite guitar players are good rhythm players, like mm-hmm. Joe Satriani. Vic's an amazing rhythm player.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
I call him Vic Right Hand Johnson. You know,
yeah.
To where guys like Neil Schon is pretty good. He's got, but he's you know he's a left hand guy. He's a shredder. You know, and he's got really good picking skills. Not picking on him, you know, at all. Ronnie Montrose was a pretty good rhythm player too. Eddie's great rhythm player. Eddie's probably the most versatile as far as being a shredder and a real pocket guy, you know. Joe's a pocket guy, kind of, but not as much as Eddie was. That's the only thing I can say. Eddie, his riffs and everything were so in a pocket, you know. Guys that have feel, that's mm-hmm. the first thing I look for. I don't give a shit if a guy can shred. I wouldn't let Vic shred on this album. He's not one shredding guitar solo.
No solos.
No solos. I said, you know what? We've done that.
Yeah.
You know, what... I want people to listen to these songs and hear them as a song and as a lyric and follow the storyline because it's a concept record. It's about greed, and it's about the misinterpretation of the devil being money being the root of all evil, and about the devil you know being involved with money and everything. As it starts off, the devil came to Philly, you know, and when they start printing money in Philadelphia, you know, and then they went to California to start printing money with Denver, and then went to Fort Knox and put all the gold and silver there. And it was like, yeah, it's devil's work, man. Money's evil. And really, it's about a guy's learning process by getting real rich, getting greedy, fucking people over, then gets really fucked himself. Old lady leaves him. Kids turn into drug addicts, a trust fund baby. He loses everything and has a realization in a song called Affirmation that really... Money's beautiful. You can change the world. You can feed the poor. You can heal the sick. You can stop a war with money. And that's the last song on the album. It's called Without Greed. Hey, hey, greed is the root of all evil, not money.
It's kind of like, beautiful. You know, people misinterpret the Bible. They say money is evil, but it actually says money is the love of money is the root of
that's
all
right.
evil.
That's right. It's the greed.
So you can use it to change, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And we got off track. That's what the album's kind of about. We got off track when they started printing money because, see, before that, people worked. You worked the fields. You know, you grew corn and you took it to market. You raised cattle, took it to market. You trapped beaver, you know, whatever you did. And you went and traded that for the goods that you needed for the rest of the year. And you just survived off your back. And then all of a sudden when they started printing money, now, I can work for money now. Right, and then I just work a little harder and I get more money, and then you get the money and you stash it all away. And the truth of the matter is, you don't feel it. You don't feel shit from paper money in a bank. You know, you get the big check. Wow, look, $1 million goes in the bank. You're sitting there going, man, where can I get another million? You know, because you didn't feel anything.
Right.
And there's no satisfaction from it. And unfortunately, but there can be. You give back, you feed people. You know how rewarding that is? You save a child's life that's, you know, dying of something. The parents can't afford it. You know, poor people that just struggling. You can help people out like that and make change their lives. That is rewarding. You feel that shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's what the album's about.
Wow, man, that's great.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know what possessed me to do this, but Vic and Mike and especially Jason, he's going, oh, fucking Sammy's going to have a fucking concept record. Okay, mate, you know, yeah. He wasn't believing it. It was so weird. I'm saying, no, we're making a concept record. He's going, yeah, you know, I like this song. Okay, fine. You know, like he's just playing the songs. And then when he started hearing the lyrics, he hit me up about a month ago. He's going, you motherfucker, man. He goes, you fucking did it. You know, he said, I was, because I must admit, I was not a believer. Nobody knew really what we were doing because I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew that I had a vision. And until I finished the lyrics and didn't put the running order together, I didn't realize if I even had it. You know what I mean? But we nailed it, man.
Man, I can visualize cover art right now. You know?
Yeah.
Gold coins and stuff like
that. No, we're working on that right now. So, you know, to me, this is the only Frank Lloyd Wright project I've ever done in my life. When I say Frank Lloyd Wright, right down to the doorknobs, to the fucking color of the screws, everything is visualized, and it's going to be to perfection. It's cut no corners, like, oh, that's good enough. Oh, that'll work. We didn't use that, right? That term, that'll work.
Mm-hmm.
We never use that. It's like, yeah, that's the part.
Right.
Yeah, that's the sound. Yeah, that's the hook, you know?
We'd be like, oh, we're done. And Nick, I get a call the next day. No, we're not. We got to go back in and do that one part. It's just not quite right.
Yeah.
Hey, man, if you have the luxury of having this beautiful place like Sammy's studio. And
you don't know how many times we said,
why not?
We're done.
Yeah.
And we'd be right back in here. No, we're not.
I'm afraid to listen to the record now because it might not be done again.
Well,
I don't know.
Hey,
at some point, you have to walk away, right? You have to say...
Yeah. No, it's nailed. See, if I didn't think it was nailed, I thought, you know, it's really... The point isn't there. The point is fucking there. It's like, the point is there. So if people will get it. I know, you know, when you hear it after what I just told you, you'll say, oh, fuck, I totally get it. Yeah, totally get it. It's very uplifting at the end. It's like, wow. You know, save the world time, you know? It's good.
How did you find this guy, Vic?
Somebody recommended Vic Johnson when I was left Van Halen, when I was unceremoniously thrown out of Van Halen.
A guy at Walt Disney.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was Walt Disney Publishing. Guy there that used to come see my band in L.A. a lot. And he knew the old keyboard player, Jesse.
Oh, so it was through. I didn't know. You know, I really didn't know.
Yeah,
how
so he called Jesse, and then you know he got my number from an old manager or something that I had. You know, but he used to come see us. This guy from
and your band
Walt Disney. He'd come see our band.
Did your band
totally
for the
clips.
Listeners? But you were in another band after
Bus Boys.
The Bus Boys,
that.
Yeah, the Bus Boys.
Yeah. But that was way before.
I loved the Bus
Boys. Yeah, that was you guys had a pretty good
Man, it was
following,
good.
Man.
It was a fun little time, that band. But, so they came, he called me, the guy from Walt Disney called first. Not Jesse. I don't know who this guy was. He's rambling on about, I think you're the perfect guy, the guitar player for Sammy Hagar, honestly. I had no idea who he was. I was like, wait a minute, slow up. Who? What are you doing? Who are you? You know, I work at Walt Disney. I'm thinking this guy's a liar.
I don't know all this shit.
Because the phone call came out.
Now I'm interested. Yeah, then what happened?
The phone call came
out of nowhere. You know, it just came out of nowhere. The phone call. You know, I thought it was a prank phone call.
Man.
Plus, that same day there was this big shooting thing in Burbank. That same day that I was supposed to go do this interview with the keyboard player, with Jesse. And I couldn't make it there that day because it was all the freeways were closed down and everything. And I'm thinking in my mind, this can't be real. But it was.
Well,
you know, that's right. Vic, Jesse would live in L.A. at that time.
Right.
That's right. And he checked you out first and he said, you're going to love this guy.
Yeah.
See, I was looking for a guy with a hard tail fucking Les Paul. I did not want to see a whammy bar coming after Eddie. I'm saying, this cat, the first guy that comes up and starts trying to play that finger tap and shit, he's out. I tried a few guys, you know, and as soon as they started playing Eddie shit, I said, out. It's not the kind of band I'm not looking to compete with Van Halen here. You know, that's what Diamond Dave did, you know, with his first time out. He tried to have another Van Halen band. I think that's the stupidest thing you possibly do, you know, personally.
Yeah.
So I wanted, you know, more like a Montrose. I was going to go back to Montrose, and Vic walked in, and we had about four songs I told him to learn or something. And when he played Three Lock Box, that's when I said, oh, shit, this is my man.
Because it's funky, right?
Yeah. It's got some stank to it.
I played down, it's all swinging. Vic was going bum bum bam bum bam boot da. It was all it was just, I don't know, he still plays it the same way. When he kicks it off, I go, fuck, that's the way it's supposed to sound, you know?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It's funky.
Yeah.
Just put some swagger to it.
Yeah. Then Bad Motor Scooter.
And I had my Black Les Paul. I walked in there. He did not expect me to come walking in there with a Black Les Paul like that. You know,
you're on your way to audition. You go, should I bring this Kramer Pacer or
don't
this
have
Black
one.
Les Paul?
Don't have one. Yeah, Gibson Les Paul.
Good decision.
Yeah. It wasn't until later that I said, Vic, can you play Eddie shit? Once I knew that he wasn't that kind of player, then I said, can you play it? And he's like, sure enough, I'm going, fuck,
I'll figure it out.
Yeah, man, it's so. Yeah. Now, Vic's so been.
I do my interpretation. You know what
I
mean?
No, I've heard it, man. It's very. It's dead on.
Right. Yeah, Vic would be in Chickenfoot if we needed another guitar player. Yeah. Joe would have him. His first guy Joe would want. The first guy I would want.
Yeah.
You know, it's like. That's the kind of guy Vic is. Sometimes, you know, Joe likes to have another guitar player. Like when we do Acoustic for a Cure, he uses Vic for his little instrumentals. He always gets Vic to play his second part because he loves the way Vic plays too. You know,
oh, it's like. He's such a great player, man. Yeah. I got to meet him a couple times. He was really...
Joe?
I don't know, but I met him backstage. He was really cool and just really nice.
Joe's a fucking genius guitar player. There's no question. He's like a master.
Yeah.
He's definitely a fucking master. I don't know how he does it. You know, I sit and watch him play and all the noises. It's like he's got it all down. And he's soulful. Like, you know, Joe's...
Funky.
Yeah, he's got that funky. Hendrix-y kind of thing, too.
He loves Hendrix. That's his number one.
But Shane, you're not a bad guitar player now.
That's right, I'm working on it.
Let's get this straight right now.
Well, thank you. I'm working on it.
I remember when we did the Live at Daryl's House thing, when you played Sexy Little Thing, which I can't even play that riff in the time it's in, because it's all on some kind of...
It's a weird thing where it starts
backwards.
When the beat comes in, it throws the thing
off.
Man,
it's like...
Two and four off.
Like Curtis Mayfield, Superfly. Remember how it was like... That's it. It was it. Boom, bad. And it was like, oh, fuck, the one's there. You know?
Yeah.
That's a Sexy Little Thing. I love it. And I have a hard time coming and singing in the right spot. And I remember... You played that motherfucker right.
You sure did.
It right.
I'd give anything to play it one more time instead of just a rehearsal take. Well, I don't remember. I haven't played it since then.
What's your problem? Shit.
But, you know, what's funny is, like, we play it, and it's great for Daryl because he can just hit his D chord about right against it. Like, you just... So he's like, this is awesome. Oh, fuck. It's done. And I'm like... And Brian looks at... The drummer looks at me, and we're like, we didn't even play the whole intro. This was a rehearsal. Mm-hmm. Like... I just started playing it. Everybody,
the way it's supposed to be, man.
It's not like it's, you know, going to be on TV and preserved for eternity. Let's move on.
That's why I do a rock roll road trip too. Every time I've done it, I've never taken a second take ever.
Well, we just did that thing. I did the thing with you and Shorty, and it was kind of like that. Sammy calls me. He goes, I want this shit to be raggedy, and I said, you called the right cats, man. Believe me, it's only going to be that way. It's a good thing you want that.
That was so fucking hip.
I thought it was great.
Shorty brings his boys in there. It's like, it's going to be ignorant and raggedy, and that's pretty much what you're going to get, you know.
That was so cool that you came down to do that, because I would have been a little uncomfortable without you being there, you know. Because
it was right around the corner from my house.
Yeah, that was a...
Because I have that house in New Orleans.
There was a bunch of cats I never met before in my life and probably would never see again. I mean, I'd love to see Trombo and Shorty and all those guys get there. But, I mean, it's like our lives, our past would not have crossed without you. There's no question about it. Yeah. Trombo's a super fucking...
He's a great
guy.
I've known him since he was 8 years old, man. He used to ride the Neville Brothers bus. And we had two buses, Neville Brothers. One would be the, quote, smoking, and the other was the non-smoking. And it was basically Aaron Neville,
Art Neville and the Charlie Neville and the tour manager on one bus, and Cyril Neville and all crew, all band, everybody on the other bus. And Shorty would be there, and he was about 9 years old, and he would be complete mayhem at 1 a.m. He would tug at my pants and go, "Shane, give me some red beans out to freeze them, man." And people were smoking weed and party everywhere. I'd be like, "Oh, man. Shorty, man, go to bed, man. Go, Shane." So now he's, you know, he's grown up, man, playing with U2 and all these people, and he's still real down
there. Highly respected, you know? Dude, man, and a very sophisticated cat, man. He really is soulful, man. I love the way he talked about New Orleans, which I know you know about New Orleans, born and raised there. It's just such a neat place, and the way he spoke about it was, it really touched my heart, man. I was very, very passionate, you know, about there's music. He said, you know, in New Orleans, you know, there's music coming out of every house. You walk down the street and you hear music coming out of people's houses. Mm-hmm. You hear it coming out of bars. You hear it coming out of, you know, restaurants. You know, it's mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. it's like just music's coming all over the place, you know. So it's pretty hip to grow up in that environment. But, you know, that I've said it before, that, but never to you. That is my favorite episode I've ever done out of the 37 or whatever.
Really?
So, yeah, man. That was that episode. I loved it. It was so full of content, and it was so colorful. You know, between the parades and Emeril Lagasse and you guys at the jam at the studio, and then going down the street in black mm-hmm. and white at the end, fucking mm-hmm. taking that shit to the streets. Come on, man. That don't happen everywhere. That's a rare event. If I start, me and the boys, we start marching down this fucking street playing like that, people, they wouldn't know what to think, man. They say, what the fuck are these fools doing? New Orleans people start joining in.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's man. We started with about 7 of us and ended up with about 30 or whatever. It's
it's true.
It's really fucking, that was my favorite episode ever.
That was a good one. I remember sitting there watching it on TV.
It's full of life, man. That thing had soul. Yeah.
I used to own that studio with a couple other partners, and Shorty bought it from. Yeah, it was a good little spot, and you know, if you'd have asked me 6-7 years ago when I was in there, yeah, Sammy Hagar is going to come over and you're going to do a taping, you know, I would have been like, get the fuck out of here.
See, you never know, man. The same thing.
You never know.
You're going to end up in a studio with a trombone player playing bass.
Yeah.
Some trumpets, some horns, and trombone and the drummer, the way he was playing. And
the first time I met you, though, Sammy, was out. It was in Minnesota, and you were on the bill, and you must have been there, Vic, and I was playing with Boss Skaggs.
Really?
And you came backstage, and you said, is Boss here? And I was like, man, that's Sammy Hagar. Is Boss here? And I said, no, he's not here yet. Here, man, I'm bring you guys some tequila. And I was like, wow. And then you came back after, and we took
that
pictures.
Was at outdoor. Yeah, it's called outdoor. A Moon. What's it called?
Moon Jam or something, one of those things.
Moon Dance or something like that.
Yeah, Moon Dance.
Yeah, we've done that a few times. And that was crazy because Crosby, Stills, and Nash were headlining, and they didn't want me to play before them. So they threw Boss Skaggs in there after me, which is crazy. I mean, you know, that should have never happened because he's so fucking good.
I thought we played
kind of music
before you guys. Uh-uh. Wow,
I'm almost positive you guys played after me.
Because I remember standing side the stage and watching the show.
Yeah, everybody's there early because the place is out in the middle of nowhere. You got to get there early, and it's hard to get into. The next year we did it, or a year or two later we did it, and it got rained out, and we sat there in torrential rains, flooding, thunder, and lightning wiped a whole motherfucker out. 40,000 people.
Dressing rooms, too.
Everything. We were stranded. It was like a mess. I mean, it was horrible. And they said, well, it's canceled. And we're going, fuck, man, we came all the way here to play, man. What are we going to do? So they said, well, there's a bar in the place that still has power in the middle of the whole campgrounds or something, and we went, jumped up on stage, and we played a fucking in the bar for I was getting paid, so I said, man, I ain't just taking the money and going home. We came here to fucking play, so we played for about 1,000 people or 400 people.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
On somebody else's gear.
Yeah,
a lot of people would have just said, well, I guess we're going home.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Well, like, not a lot of people. All the people. There were cars underwater. It they got 40 inches of rain overnight. It was like. It was.
It did not stop. It was coming down New Orleans style.
It stopped right at that fucking venue, man. It was brutal. The tents went down, the stage went down, the PA went, everything, man.
I never knew it rained like that in Minnesota.
Never seen no rain like that.
Wow, that sounds like a Southern thing.
Yeah. You know, not like, I mean, Jazz Fest, New Orleans Jazz Fest, it's you can set your watch on, like, one weekend it's going to rain. Mm-hmm. A couple shows will get, you know, it's just the nature of when it is, you know. Well, look, man,
Shane,
I don't want to take up too much more of your time. So,
fuck, man, you already took up all this time, Shane, man. You know what? You're going to owe me, man. Hey, that machine isn't still on, is it? Because people didn't hear me talk like that to Shane, did they?
No, before I walked in, you said, text me when you get here because I won't hear you because I'm playing guitar real loud so I could hear it through the door. It sounded killer.
Yeah, I'm going to play you one song. I got to play you maybe two, but for sure one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right on.
Not on your thing, though.
We're not going to do that. We're not going to.
Okay.
All right. Hey, thanks, guys. Thank you, Sammy.
You're welcome,
thank
man.
You.
Yeah, we got to play Shane Can't Hang.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
All right. If you're still here, thank you so much for hanging in there. Wish I had more time with Sammy, but we got a lot of good conversation in there with Vic and Sammy. Can't wait to hear that record. I did hear a lot of it, actually. We sat, Sammy and I, and listened to it on some killer monitors. And, man, when that comes out, slamming tracks. Very Zeppelin-esque. But like Sammy said, it's a concept record, which is brilliant. Anyway, all I ask is you leave me a good review on iTunes. I really appreciate that. Love hearing from you. I'll try to get another one of these. I did another great interview while I was in Los Angeles. I'll post that one in the next few weeks, hopefully. As always, take care. Hope you're enjoying your summer. See you next time.